Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 37 of the Finger Lakes Golfer Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv and YouTube, recorded live on Monday evening, August 24th, 2015. I'm your host, Jim Sinacropi, joined alongside my co-host, the Bobcat, Bob LaPrade. And also back in studio is winning Canal Cup captain Doug Brown and Kevin Schweitz, who's a member of the Seneca Falls Country Club and the SFCC Canal Cup team. And we'll be with you for the next hour. We're going to recap the final event of the PGA Tour regular season. Talk about Davis Love III's win at age 51 and the run Tiger Woods made this weekend at the Wyndham that fell short on Sunday. We'll review a revolution in putter grip technology as we gave Garson grips a try. We'll talk about this weekend's Canal Cup matches between Seneca Falls Country Club and Silver Creek. We'll tell you what's so strange about the new U.S. Men's Amateur Champions golf clubs. And we'll have all your local golf news, holes in one, and much, much more. A lot to get to tonight, fellas, so I probably should get things going right off the bat. Welcome everybody in. We've got upper left corner there, Kevin Schweitz. First time in the studio, Kevin.
True.
Interesting tidbit about Kevin Schweitz. When we made the move, FingerLakes1.com made the move into this building 8-9 years ago. Kevin, who works in the IT industry, was a big help in getting everything set up.
Nice.
And now he's back. We're going to talk about golf. And then we got lower right, the Bobcat right there, and lower left or right, whichever way you're looking at it. Right on your screen is Doug Brown back in studio. Doug, hi.
Good to be here. Thanks.
So let's talk about the Canal Cup right off the bat because we all played in it.
Yep.
And now as Ryder Cup competitions work, one team has possession of the cup. So if it's a tie, they keep possession. To get the cup, you need to win. And Saturday's matches at Silver Creek ended in a 6-6 tie, and it was very exciting. It was the first time in the 11-year history of the event where it's come down to the end like that, and onto the last hole, last group. And basically what happened was the Seneca Falls Country Club team of Chuck Erzman and Steve Brown needed to have their match with Bummer Felice and Scoot Stein, and they were tied going into the hole, and Chucky Erzman made a 10-foot par putt to secure the win, and Seneca Falls retained the Canal Cup for the 11th straight year. And Doug, you're the captain. Why don't you kind of give us your analysis of the afternoon?
Okay. Well, last week, remember, I told you the history. Some of the matches were very close, even though we might win 7-5 or something along those lines. A lot of them go down to the 8th or 9th hole, you know, 1-up, 2-1, things like that. Well, it played out that way again. Nobody got shut out, so nobody won two matches outright. And both nines were kind of interesting the way they started out. On the first nine, alternate shot, the Seneca Falls team got out to a 2-0 lead. Both first two groups won their matches kind of early. And then the nine ended up being tied 3-3. Silver Creek rallied and got three of the next four, right? So we go to the back side, all tied, which I believe is the first time that's happened. And getting out of the gate on the backside, Silver Creek wins the first two matches. Yep. So the momentum continued for them. And then Seneca Falls rallied towards the end in order to retain the cup. I think there was only about two or three matches that did not go the distance on either nine. Most of them finished in nine holes, whether it ended up 1-up or 2-1, or I'm sorry, 2-up or tied. I know some groups, they finished on the 16th hole on the backside. Jimmy, your match in the morning round, I think, ended on seven. Yep. And so did mine. But the other matches all went the length. And, you know, a good bounce here or there flips those matches around, or a good putt or a missed putt. And it ended up being very exciting. It's the first time we've had the last group coming down with golf carts lining the green. It's, you know, the rest of us were all spectators at that point in time.
It had to be 25, 30 people surrounding that back of that 18th green at Silver Creek, which it's right. A great hole to finish on for something like that. Right. You can see the guys way down the fairway across the big hill, and right. And plenty of room to get behind though, in between the pine trees and the green back there.
Yep.
And it was great. It was kind of, I think, what we all envisioned when we started playing this tournament.
Right. I think the go back to Ryder Cup history, it got really good because the Europeans won a couple. You know, because the U.S. used to kick their butts all the time. You know, this is kind of the way it went. Now this is evened out. It was, I mean, they're one shot from retaining or holding that cup right now for the next year. One shot somewhere, whether we miss one or they make one.
Yeah.
And we can, both sides can say we're, God, we made a bomb or we missed a short putt, but that's the way it shakes down in those games, right? You know, I'm sitting in the cart behind the 18th green. It's the first time I'd ever started planning on what speech I was going to make to present the cup
concession
to those guys.
Speech.
Truthfully, I've never prepared myself for the Lanny Watkins at Oak Hill, you know, all that. So I guess thankfully I never had to make that speech, but I was preparing myself. I thought it was exciting. I think it's great. There's a lot of talk about it around town. Mm-hmm. I know we were at Seneca Falls yesterday playing, and the membership, big following. I'd like to think it's the same at Silver Creek. I'm sure it is. Even at work, you know, there's a lot of people coming up talking about it, and there's a lot of people that pay attention to it.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. And so, you mentioned a putt here or a putt there. For me, Bobby and I were partners, and we'll talk about our matches maybe in a little bit, but in the back side, coming down, if anybody knows the way Silver Creek's laid out, we were on the 15th hole, and we were two or three down at the time, and Doug was ahead of us, and his match was down, and over on the 13th green was Kevin Schweitz, Jason Perrault against Mike Strome and Jody Benedicts, and what that match was supposedly tied. And key match. I mean, they're all key. Yeah. There's only six on each side. So anyways, as I'm sitting waiting to hit my second shot into the 15th green, the 13th green's about 20, 30 yards away because I'm on the right rough of 15. And I look, and there's Mike Strome rolling in a 40-foot putt from the fringe that just topples over the edge, and they go crazy. And I'm like, man, this is getting going from bad to worse right now. We really are going to lose the cup this year. And then I look, and I see Kevin Schweitz lining up his putt from about the same distance, 35 feet, just a little inside of Strome's. And, maybe he can have the hole, make a birdie of his own, but unlikely from that distance. And doesn't, you know, this guy, one of the best putters down at the club, rolls it in. And not only does that stop the momentum, it totally swings it. Because when Strome made his putt,
Jay went nuts.
And you know for a fact that they had that hole marked up as a win. Right. No way you're going to. So now all of a sudden, boom, you roll it in on top of them. I think that was the momentum. As a matter of fact, I turned to Bob and I said, I tell you, things are about to turn right now. And I felt like even though we were down that I could make a run myself, and I hit my best shot of the day, maybe a 5-iron in close to that back left pin on 15. And
great shot.
So I think that was the shot of the day, was the answer by Kevin. So what were you stunned when you saw Strome roll in first?
Yeah, because we were about the same distance, and I it was kind of a debate of who was going to go first, but I let him go first, and once he rolled that in, I know we didn't have much of a choice but to make it, so I just gave it a wrap because it went in on the last roll pretty much. And
yeah, they both kind of hung on the edge and felt then. It was crazy.
Yeah. So then we parred the next hole, and then I birdied the 16th, which kind of took the wind out of their sails there too. But Strome dropped bombs from everywhere. So that was not the first putt that he dropped that day. So I was kind of expecting it because, you know, with match play, you can't count them out.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the mindset you have to have in match play.
Right.
And it's funny how they say golf isn't a team sport, but when you get in an event like this, you definitely feel like you're part of a team, and you definitely are relying on the performance of your teammates. Like, we lost on the back nine, our point, Bob, but it sure felt a lot better to still be winners overall, you know?
Yeah.
You know, if we end up not losing the cup, we're kicking ourselves about our match, that we could have been the difference. But we really, talking about you and I, Bob, we got off to a great start alternate shot.
Absolutely.
The strategy part of the alternate shot rounds was somebody tees off odds and evens. So Bob and I were thinking, Bobby lately has been hitting beautiful high draw long drives, and I've been playing great with my wedges. So I wanted Bobby having driver on his hand as many holes as he could on the front, because at that front nine at Silver Creek, good drive will leave you just a little wedge into almost every hole. Coincidentally, except for four and six, which are even holes. So anyways, that's what we did, and we were four under par. Well, we were three under par when the match ended, and then we played the eighth hole as a scramble, but my first shot was took was a tap in. So I would have been telling people we were 4 under through 8, which is amazing for alternate shot.
Yeah,
I think even par is a great score in alternate shot, yeah. And to be 3 under or 4 under, whichever, tremendous.
And it was, and Bobby was stepping up and hitting those drives on those holes, and I was hitting those wedges to inside 5 feet, and it was great. And Bobby made a couple really clutch putts, and it was a great match because we both birdied one. I knocked a little wedge on one to about 3 feet above the hole. They knocked one to like a foot and a half below the hole.
Yep.
And then Bob stepped up and knocked that putt in. And then there was another hole, Bob, where you had to make a pretty clutch hole three. We would have never gotten off to that start. Bobby missed a green short right. I chipped it long about 10 feet.
Yep.
Bobby, and they had already been in the hole for par, and the match was tied at that point. You knocked it in.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it was great. That was
a good putting day for both of us, I think. And I've never been part of that type of experience for alternate shot format before. It was just it was amazing. If we faltered a little bit, the other guy made up, and that's what it's all about, an alternate shot. And it was just I don't know if we could replicate that again.
There's more strategy involved. You got to think about where is the strong suit of the other guy. Where do you want the ball left? Are you a good 50-yard player? Or are you a good 100-yard player?
Right. Yeah,
that type of thing, you know. But then you got to pull it off, too.
Yeah, then it's all talk until you actually hit the shots.
Right. But still, the bottom line is making the putts.
And the other part of it is you're so into the match play aspect of it that, geez, you know, honestly, if I'm playing my own ball on the front side and I'm 3 under at some point, like we were as a team, alternate shot, which is even harder than playing your own ball.
Right.
I'm starting to get into my head about thinking about my score and, you know, if I do this on the next few holes. But an alternate shot match, I just kept thinking about the next shot and the next hole. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think after every single hole, I said to Bob, let's win one before they do. Let's no matter we were 3 up with a chance to dormium or we were tied. That's after every tee, I said, let's win this hole before they went home. And
I honestly didn't know where we were till like hole 6. I just knew we were doing good. I just didn't...
You don't watch the scoreboards?
Well, at that point, I just wasn't really thinking about it. I was just thinking about the next shot, you know?
It's better.
Yeah.
If that works for you, that's great.
Yeah.
So with all the momentum in the world, we go to the back nine then, Bob. And, you know, on 10, I had a wedge into the green, and I left it way short on the green, but I left myself about a 40-foot putt from the front left to the back right, and one of our opponents knocked a nice chip up close for a tap-in par, and I three-putt, and now all of a sudden we're one down. You know, it's a new match, and we can't take that 3-4-up lead into the backside. Right. And then hole 11, par 5, you and I both bogey it. Next thing you know, we're 2 down, and the whole complexion of everything changes.
Yep.
And
how you feel. And
that's the beauty of match play.
Yep.
So our opponent, Gary Millard, hit a great shot on 12, about 15 feet below the hole. And then Bobby steps up, and I'm not sure what club he hit, but he hit it to about 3 feet, 4 feet.
Yep.
Don't you know Millard makes his putt? And now poor Bob's got to hit this. It was about a 2-inch breaker on hole 12, the par 3, just to keep us at 2 down. And he made it.
Good.
Yeah, made some great putts that day, like clutch putts. Bob was upset about the way he played on the back nine matches, and I said, Bob, think about all the great shots you hit today and those clutch putts. I mean, my God, that's what you got to focus on.
Yeah, it's tough when you're sitting around 18 and you know where you are. I kind of left you out hanging on quite a few holes.
I never looked at it like that, though. I never felt like it.
Yeah.
I was focused on just trying to play my ball. And, I never felt like you left me hanging, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So anyways, hey, congratulations, Captain. Good job.
Yep, well, we'll do it again next year.
At Seneca Falls, maybe expand it?
We are going to make some modifications. It'll more than likely be a 27-hole event. I don't know what the third format would be because we do alternate shot in best ball. Now I'm assuming those would stay, and we'll just add a third one, maybe a scramble.
Yep.
Or maybe individuals. I don't know. All right. But we'll work that out, and probably be about the same time, you know,
mid-August.
Nice. So I haven't got to worry about darkness.
We used to do 36 holes in October, and that was always tough.
Right.
And really, of course, at Silver Creek was in fantastic shape.
It was.
greens were awesome.
Yeah, they were good hosts. Yep. It was a great event. They did a nice job for us. And but look forward to next year, and I assume they'll do the same kind of thing with maybe some tryouts on their side. And then, again, we'll get together about the middle of August and probably have the about the same starting time, 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, whatever. And I think next year I'll get another honorary captaincy and we'll be home.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Do it every home match.
Yeah.
I can think of some good candidates.
Yeah, I'll take suggestions. So, but looking forward to playing again.
Nice.
So before we get off the topic, there's just a picture of old the Bobcat getting a drink from the cup.
Yeah.
Now, we weren't sure the last time that's been washed, so you're feeling okay tonight?
Feeling pretty good. Feeling pretty good, but you never know.
It takes 72 hours, Bob.
It could take 72 hours. Yeah.
So let's move on now to the Wyndham. There's so much great stuff that's happened in the world of golf this year. It's been one of the best years in recent memory. You know?
It's crazy.
Tiger jumped out to a great start at the Wyndham this week and was in contention on the weekend. But at the end of the day, it was Davis Love III who
shot 64
at age 51 in the final round to win for the third time at Greensboro, or what used to be Greensboro. Right. Now is the Wyndham. And now he can play in the Masters next year. He's going to go to Kapalua to play in that tournament with all the winners. The PGA Championship he's exempt for. So here's a guy who is starting to play Senior Tour events and Champions Tour, and he picks up a PGA Tour win. And now here's some interesting age stats from Golf Digest, the Loop blog. If you've never heard of that, you might want to check it out. You search for Golf Digest, the Loop. They update it every day with almost little tidbits around the golf world. But when Davis Love received NCAA All-American honors in 1983, Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, and Ricky Fowler had not even been born. While Love was on the golf team at North Carolina, there was a guy by the name of Michael Jordan on the basketball team. Think about that.
Yeah.
Jordan's basketball career is long over.
Right.
Love's first PGA win came in 1987. The highest grossing film that year was Three Men and a Baby. And locally, you can take it back to 87, was the year that Syracuse won the Sugar Bowl, or tied in the Sugar Bowl against Auburn, and the final four, the team basketball team went to the Final Four in New Orleans. I mean, that seems like ancient history, right?
Yeah.
Davis Love III won a PGA tournament that year, and he won one this year. I like this one, too. Hall of Fame shortstop Barry Larkin was born a week after Davis Love.
Wow.
And he had a long career, 19 seasons in the major, and he retired 11 years ago.
Wow.
He was once a Ryder Cup teammate of Ray Floyd, who is now 72 years old. And when he won the 1997 PGA Championship, he was using a wooden persimmon driver.
That's crazy.
That is insane. I couldn't believe some of these things, but it's from Golf Digest. They're usually got fact checkers. So now he's headed to the FedEx playoffs, just like all those guys I mentioned that weren't even born when he was an All-American. But another interesting stat about Davis Love that I want to talk about a little bit is, for the week at Sedgefield, he averaged 297 yards off the tee. 9 years ago, he averaged 290.8 off the tee when he won the tournament down the road at Forest Oaks. So 9 years later, 9 years older, he's averaging 8 yards more per drive off the tee. And just so you know, these numbers aren't arbitrary. In 2006, when he won, he was fourth in driving distance against the rest of the field that week. This year, tied for 32nd. So he's... It's the technology has advanced that much in 9 years. Do you think that's what it is?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I do agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that's a big, big part of it, you know, the golf ball, the equipment. I also think that a 51-year-old now is in much better shape physically than a 51-year-old was 20 years ago on the PGA Tour. And it's kind of across the board. These guys, golfers, are treating it more as an athletic sport and getting their bodies in shape, where in the mid-80s, you know, Craig Stadler-type physiques were common on tour, right?
Yeah.
now you see one of these guys like Jason Gore, who he competed against this week. It's kind of, he definitely looks different than most guys. Most guys are looking pretty fit, whether it's Adam Scott or Jason Day or Jordan Spieth, or even Davis Love at 51. You know, if you looked at him from 20 yards away, he looks the same.
Right. TV adds 15 pounds, too. He looks still pretty skinny.
Davis Love's a big skier, too. He loves downhill skiing, so...
So he's active.
That'll keep you in shape.
He's been injured a couple of times because of that.
Right.
He's a grandfather.
Wow. You look at the tech trucks they have now there and stuff, and those guys are getting fitted for shafts within, you know, just crazy...
Getting totally dialed in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is he one on the senior tour this year?
Geez, you know, that's a good question. He's been eligible for over a year now, so
well, he's played some. What does I ask if he won? He could, like, spend a month in Hawaii because they have the tour championship.
Right after, yeah.
Tournament champions right after the regular tour.
Yep.
So yeah, he could play it Capitol both ways. Hill,
he could play YLA or whatever it is over there and then go back and play the senior tour event that comes in right after that.
And just stay in Hawaii for a month.
Life is good.
When you're Davis Love III, I suppose it is. Now, he was coming off an injury, too, not unlike Tiger Woods.
Right.
He said his son, who's not a toddler, he's an older kid who plays golf. I don't know his credentials, but he's a good golfer. He had broken one of his putters, so he needed a new putter, and Davis Love needed a new putter, so he was just rummaging around his son's old putters, and he found the one of his son's old putters, and that's what he used. And he putted the lights out. I mean, the only way a 51-year-old is going to win a PGA Tour event is if he's in the top two or three for putting for the week, you know. So, congratulations, Davis Love. We could talk about Tiger. Before we talk about Tiger, real quick, players who failed to advance to the playoffs for the first time, Freddie Jacobson, Brian Davis, Bo Van Pelt, Ernie Els, Jeff Ogilvy, Aaron Baddeley, KJ Choi, and Steve Stricker. 9 rookies in the top 125. Justin Thomas is ranked 36th. Tony Finau, 39. And then you got Daniel Berger, Scott Pinckney, Adam Hadwin, Nick Taylor, John Curran, Zach Blair, and Carlos Ortiz. And so next week they head to the Barclays. First round of the playoffs. The top 100 on the FedEx points list at that point will advance. And if you really want to understand how the FedEx players work, go to PGAtour.com and look at the FedEx point standings. They've now made these bars that show each week where the cut is, which was pretty cool to see. So this week, it's you got to finish inside the top 100. And it's not, it does nothing resets. It's your cumulative points. But just to give you an idea, Davis Love the third. I don't actually have it. But he jumped up a good chunk by winning. So you can take, if one of these guys outside the 100.
They're taking the week off, some of them.
Oh, some of the top guys are, like Rory, Sergio. Yeah,
you don't even need to play.
But, well, you know, that's, I'm sure the PGA is not too happy.
No.
Or FedEx.
No. But Horschel did that last year. He didn't take one off, but I'm not sure where he finished in the 125, but he got hot.
Yeah.
Won the whole darn thing.
Yeah.
So.
Coming from deep.
Yes.
He wasn't top 50.
No.
So. And it'll be at Penfield Country Club, Edison, New York. $8 million purse. The first time the tour has been back since 2011, and Dustin Johnson won it in 2011. It was only 54 holes, though, because Hurricane Irene was bearing down. Defending champ of the Barclays is Hunter Mahan, and top 100 advance to the Deutsche Bank Championship. TV will be Thursday through Friday, 2 to 6 on the Golf Channel. And it'll be Saturday from 1 to 2:30 Golf Channel, and then 3 to 6 on CBS, who I think did a great job at the Wyndham, by the way. We were not happy with their coverage of the PGA. Sunday, noon to 1:30 on the Golf Channel, 2 to 6 on CBS. And anybody got a quick pick?
I like Dustin Johnson.
You like Dustin Johnson?
Yep.
Okay. Doug, you got a pick? I put you on the spot. Well,
who's not playing besides Rory? He's the only one.
Sergio's the only other one. So yeah, you got
pick Sergio.
No, he's not playing.
I wouldn't pick him.
Spieth will be there.
Yeah, I think you got to lean towards Spieth their day.
Yeah.
I guess I would take Spieth overall because he just seems more consistent than everybody
else. It's tough to pick against Jordan Spieth.
Yeah.
That's who you're taking?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough to pick against Spieth. I really feel good about Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, he's solid. He's been playing good. Can't argue.
Four top tens in the last six. It seems like he's about to maybe have a big win and be one of those guys that makes a name for themselves in the FedEx. Spieth, yeah, I mean, if I had to pick one guy, I think I'd pick Spieth. How can you not?
I don't know if he's going to win, but I think Tony Finau is going to have a good...
Yeah, he's another guy that's trending that way, and he's not afraid of the spotlight, as shown by the way he played the PGA.
Right.
Jason Day, you know, I have a rule for kind of the fantasy golf picking, and which when someone like Jason Day is coming off a career-changing win, is I don't like to pick him right off the bat because I think there's some adjustment. And you saw it with Ricky Fowler after he won the PGA, even though that wasn't a major. Yeah. And I think Jordan Spieth's the only one that's kind of really been immune to that.
Right.
So, you saw it with Zach Johnson, too.
Yep.
After he won the British Open, he went to Bridgestone, missed the cut.
And that week after, there's so much that goes along.
That's right.
They have to do that they're just exhausted by the time they
get. Right.
I'm surprised they play at all the week after.
Yeah, well, they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't.
You don't see a lot of guys win two or three in a row.
No.
You know, there's got to be exhaustion and people tugging at you as well, but...
Not a lot of time to practice. There's all these other obligations now suddenly from going to like a David Letterman show or, you know, it's crazy. So now let's talk about Tiger. Started the week 187th in FedEx points, and he did finish top 10, birdie in four of the last seven holes, I think, after triple bogey in the 11th to move up to 178th. But by they're saying now by the end of the end of the year, he may drop even further. So as it turns out, a solo second wouldn't have been good enough to get him into the playoffs. He needed to win Sunday to keep his season alive, but he's definitely moving in the right direction. But he's still not close. He folded. He chunked. He sculled a chip and chunked a chip. I mean, he's got the chipping yips.
Yeah.
It's the same stuff that he had in Phoenix Open back in January or February to now. I don't know. So I know, just, Doug, you think he's on his way back.
I do believe he's on his way back. And just you saying that he's improved so much makes me truly believe, because you were dead set against him all season long here on this show.
Well, we got to define what it means for Tiger to be back. For me, it's win a major, win another major. He doesn't even have to catch Nicklaus. For him to be back, he needs to win a major, not lead a major in the third round and finish five shots back in the fourth, not even win the Wyndham, or not win the fries.com in the fall.
Right.
Those are all indicators that he's back. But when I say that he's done, I mean done winning major championships.
So what I saw, over 72 holes, probably 66, 67 holes of pretty solid golf. He made a couple bogeys. He had one triple bogey, no doubt about that, right on number 11 yesterday. But he played darn well. You know, it wouldn't have taken much maybe to win that event, and I really believe if he wins one, he might win five of the next seven.
It could, because I think it's mental. Yeah. I don't think, I mean, there's a lot, obviously, technical going on there, but I think the overriding reason for his struggles are mental. Yeah. He even mentioned that his hip was bothering him.
Yeah, I saw that.
And, you know, that's typical Tiger. Mm-hmm. When something like this happens, an injury goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
So either, A, he's just kind of making that stuff up because he's having so many mental issues, or B, he really does have another physical ailment that's going to require another extended leave. And
But he rallied. He did grab his back or his hip a couple times on 11 and 12, but then he birdied, I don't know, three of the last five or six.
Sure, it didn't hurt anymore.
Right. So, well, it's mental, right? I think he's not far off. I saw a guy hitting balls, and as soon as he picked up his tee, hit the ball, pick up the tee. Or hits his iron shots, he's staring right at that flag. That was kind of vintage Tiger for 66, 67 holes. All right. I think his putting looks solid.
Yeah, he putted it better than he has in a while.
I wish we were talking about this in March or April, because I think the season could be different. And the sad thing is now he's probably not going to play until the event that he hosts in December or something along those lines.
Well, he's committed for the fries.com, right? And Bob, you've been saying you want him to play a lot in the fall.
I think he should play too. Yeah. I totally agree.
I tell you, though, if he does in those weaker field events and he doesn't win a couple or...
contend.
Yeah, which who knows how he's going to be after an extended layoff again. I don't know. How can you then enter the major season with any confidence? There'll be even more questions. And at some point,
Well, I don't think it'll ever happen. As long as Tiger's playing golf, the media will care and people will show up like they did at the Wyndham.
Yeah, they printed 49,000 extra tickets because he committed.
Yeah, think about that. That's a lot of people. Yeah.
So let's talk about CBS. You said it was great coverage.
I thought it was better. More golf. They showed more golf.
Where was Jim Nantz? The Wyndham was such a weak event. Jim Nantz had the week off.
Yeah.
And what if Tiger won that and Jim Nantz wasn't there?
Yeah, that's true. He wouldn't have been able to make the signature call.
That's right.
Maybe it's Jim Nantz's fault that Tiger took that triple.
Could be.
Well,
Shows you the golf really revolves around him. Because what did you say? He was 187th in the FedEx Cup going in, 290 something in the world or whatever going in.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm going to play, and there's 50,000 extra fans.
Yeah.
They must run out of hot dogs.
Oh, yeah. They had to order more of everything. I'm sure it was a boon for the tournament.
Everybody had to make a fortune. The sponsors had to be happy. And now the FedEx Cup's probably not. Right. A little more upset he's not.
Oh, absolutely. And if anybody's written for him, it was the good folks over at FedEx.
Yep. And I don't believe 50,000 people went there to watch him chunk that chip shot on 11. They went there to watch him win.
Yeah, especially.
So the love-hate is gone.
Oh, yeah. I think more people want to be a part. If there's a difference, too, between a viewer at home and a patron at the event.
Yes.
When you're a patron in a golf event, you feel like you're part of that event. So, if you're feeling that momentum of a Tiger Woods run, you want to be a part of it. You want to tell people about it. So you will become a Tiger fan. At least most people would. I don't know if I would.
Well, a couple things.
I might go follow Jason Gore.
A couple things. Americans, at least American golf fans or American sports fans, love the underdog. So right now, I think it's fair to say that Tiger Woods is pretty much an underdog in every event he gets into.
That's true, too.
Another thing, too, is Tiger is, whether you like it or not, he's trending mathematically in the right direction. And after the last tournament, he's trending very hard towards very, very positive results. I think he's just, he's going to build upon it every tournament he plays, and he's going to get more and more confidence. And when Tiger has confidence, he can be dangerous. He can be very, very dangerous.
Yeah, I don't think he gained any. I think he gave all the confidence away with that bladed chip on 11. I think any confidence that he gained, he gave it right back, because he'll be in a situation like that again. And he's been practicing the chipping, obviously, if he's concerned about it. And so I think with that one blade, it just is like a huge setback.
I think it's all momentum, right? He knows he can do it for 3 rounds. Next thing you know, he's going to do it for 4 rounds. And once he can get through 4 rounds, and maybe he'll finish second, maybe he'll win.
Right.
He knows he can do it, and it's like a little snowball going down a hill, right? So.
Yeah, but you know who else is trending? Brooks Koepka, Danny Lee, David Lingmuth. I mean, there's just so much competition out there for him.
I think a Tiger Woods with confidence is more dangerous than anybody on tour right now.
I'll agree with you there, but I don't think he has the confidence.
I don't think so either.
Well, he needs to get it. He needs to get it.
But there was a couple of shots. He putted off the fringe a couple of times that I thought on Friday that they should have been chips, and I think that's in his head. He knows.
He's got the chip in yips. Putting.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
So even when he's playing and he's contending, he's still thinking about that in the back of his mind.
Absolutely.
You're right. Most of those professionals would chip from there.
Yeah.
They very seldom putt from 5 feet off the edge.
Yeah.
So now what happens when Tiger finds himself on the 16th hole or 17th hole at Augusta with a tough little pitch shot and he's in contention again? And I'd take anybody else in the field except for Tiger to hit that shot.
Right now.
Yeah, right now. He could work himself out of it. But Golf Channel did a nice little segment about the chart. Brandel Chamblee talked about the chipping yips and about how that's like something you never overcome, and he's never seen anybody overcome it. You work around it.
Right. So I would agree with your assessment about the confidence loss after the chip, except for the way he finished up the back 9.
But the pressure was off him.
I know, but if he'd have shot 42, then I would say record. Now the driver goes crooked and the wedge goes off the green and all that kind of good stuff. But he comes back with 3 birdies.
3 months ago, he wouldn't have.
So he did charge into the top 10, but is Tiger? Yeah. Do you look at Tiger Woods as a guy who charges to the top 10 or that blows away the field and wins the tournament?
Right now, the glass is half full for me. Okay.
Okay. Still half empty for me.
Hang on to it. Hang on to it, Doug.
Well, this will probably be the last time we talk about Tiger. We've talked about him all summer. Right. It's kind of been the summer of Tiger, but he's gone. We'll talk about other things going forward. So, fairly well, Tiger Woods. We hope you pull it together, and as much as I'm predicting that he won't, it'll be great for golf, obviously, if he did come back. Hey, I don't know if you guys caught any LPGA action this weekend, but Lydia Ko won in a playoff against Stacey Lewis, and it was nice to see. Stacey Lewis is kind of an up-and-comer on the LPGA Tour. That's kind of what the LPGA Tour needs, is some more American personalities winning the tournament. And, Kevin, you said that they tonight chose the final two members, captain's choices for the Solheim Cup.
Yeah, Julie Engster picked Paula Creamer and Brittany Lang as her captain's picks.
Nice.
The U.S. only gets two. So the other four came from actual points that they do, and then the other four came from the world rankings. And then the Europeans take four captain's picks, and they'll be picked tomorrow. Solheim Cup in a month.
Yeah, and like you say, just like the Canal Cup for us and the Ryder Cup or President's Cup, it's...
Yeah, those guys are into it pretty big.
It's always fun to watch those types of match play situations with people playing for their country.
Lydia Ko, she's a Ledbetter student, right?
Ooh, I don't know. Good question.
I think so. I think she's the controversial ace wing in Ledbetter.
You want to talk about controversial swings, Bob? Thanks for segueing me right into the U.S. Amateur, which was won Sunday by SMU senior Bryson DeChambeau. And DeChambeau became the fifth player to win the tournament and the NCAA individual title in the same year. He's from Clovis, California. He beat Virginia junior Derek Bard of New Hartford, New York, 7-6 in the 36-hole final at Olympia Fields. Now listen to this. There's only a few other players who won both those, the NCAA championship and the amateur USAM in the same season. Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, and Ryan Moore. So that's a pretty elite group, especially for Ryan Moore to be with. But those, I mean, that is elite company. So it's, you can pretty, even Ryan Moore is a fixture on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
So, we're going to hear more from this kid. And what's amazing about him, there's a couple things. First, he's a student of a book written by a guy named Homer Kelly in 1982 called The Golfing Machine.
Yep.
And it's a real analytical approach, technical, very technical to the golf swing, is like a machine. And if you watch, you saw he stood upright. He had less wrist cock, really an unorthodox swing. But then, he dusted this guy in the national championship. So it's obviously working for him. But the other amazing thing about this kid is he custom made his set. All his irons and wedges are the same length, about the length of a 7-iron.
Really?
Because he feels, and so does, I think, this Golfing Machine writer, author.
Homer Kelly,
that you're going to get more center strikes because you're going to be practicing the same swing. Not, the center of the club's the same on a 5-iron as it is on your pitching wedge or gap wedge.
Yeah, he lets the loft do everything for him.
And it's certainly an interesting thought, but Doug, you're pretty knowledgeable about shafts and equipment, and one thing that they're saying is that by doing this, you're changing the weights of the lower irons are higher weighted, and the kick points and the shafts that are longer. It's really a bigger change. I think, like, if the average golfer just cut them all down to 7 iron, it probably wouldn't work out.
Right, you got to balance it out, because you got a wedge that's heavy, which normally has a 35-inch shaft, and I think he goes with like 37.5. I think so. It would make that wedge very, very heavy. So I don't know if they're taking weight out of that head by grinding it or counterbalancing the grip, which would just make more weight to the club. But I understand the logic of it with the one swing, basically,
mm-hmm.
with all your irons, right?
Mm.
But you're right, the swing weights would be different. Then your 3-iron would be very, if you had a 3-iron, I'm not sure how far it goes with irons, but your 3-iron would be very light because you're basically shortening it by 1.5 inches or so. So,
interesting experiment.
Yeah.
Bobby's going to cut them all down this week.
I got an old set. I could try it.
Well, it gives you one posture, one
place
for your hands.
Wedges, too.
Yeah.
That's what
Yeah, you'd have to lengthen the wedges.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to cut them down. You'd have to put new wedges on them, or shafts on your wedges, Bob. Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised. But hey, it worked for this guy. He was also the low am at the U.S. Open, low amateur sure. finisher at the Open. So he with this technique, something. I went on and looked at this book, the golf machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know it very well.
I'm not surprised you do. Well, Bob, you do know a lot of things. One thing you know about products, you pick one out each week or some product or service or something, and, of course, that's Bobby's pick of the week, and that's starting right now. Bobby's pick of the week. All right, Bob, what do you got this week?
This week we got Garson Grips, putting grips. As you can see, there's a nice grip. It has a great feel. I spent some extended time with a putter with one of these on them, and I liked it. I liked it a lot. It has a good feel, very tacky.
Well, the point of this is that it comes to a point in front so your thumbs can go on either side, Bob, and right, I think maybe the best thing to do is to let the president and CEO give us a quick run through here on what these things do. So check this out.
What makes the G Pro Edge different? Unlike a traditional putter grip with one flat side on top, the G Pro Edge has a unique two-sided patented design. This places your hands into a neutral position. It turns your elbows into your body and sets your shoulders back into a relaxed position. This releases tension and eliminates unwanted wrist breakdown, giving you a more consistent putting stroke. I'm Bernard Garson. Get the edge on your game with the Garson G Pro Edge.
The revolutionary G Pro Edge putter grip is now available at GarsonGolf.com.
So there you go. I mean, that pretty much puts it for you, shows you what's kind of unique about this thing, and that's that the it's a triangle at the tip. So if you have, I think if you're a guy that feels like your right hand's too dominant sometimes and that you're turning putts over or you're leaving them open, that this would work for you. Get those thumbs opposing comfortably on the grip. It's always, with the traditional grip, when you try to do the opposing thumbs, it almost feels like the putter head's unwieldy, mm-hmm. right? But with this, that's how it's built. USGA conforming. Tony Finau used it in the PGA Championship this year, and I assume used it at the Wyndham as well.
Yeah.
Now, I put that grip on that Bob has right there on my putter, and I got to be honest with you, I took it off because it was a little too thick. It was too big. I don't like the big putters. They also sent me this grip called the Ultimate. They sent us, and this has a flat on the side, but you can... It just fits my hands perfectly, and I've been putting and putting pretty well with this. But if you go on their website, and this is kind of, I think I might have to place an order here, is, let's go to the online store. You'll see that they make it in a more standard size. Just kind of a, like that was the one we saw in the video. Yeah. And we didn't get a chance to test one of those, but that's the one for me. Not the oversized grip. But Bob, you've been putting so well, you haven't put one on yours yet. You know, you putted with my putter for a while and got the feel.
Yep. I prefer a skinnier grip. I've tried all different sizes. I've tried the bigger. This is just, this particular grip, like this one, is just a touch bigger than I would prefer. Right? I feel like I have more control with a smaller grip.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt.
As they get larger, I feel like I lose precision than I would with a smaller grip.
So these beauties are about the G Pro Edge, which is the smaller, norm standard size grip, starts at $20, $19.95 at the website at GarsonGolf.com. I want to thank Garson for sending us over those grips.
Absolutely.
I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of the design. Mm-hmm. I think it's ingenious. And, Doug, you know a few guys that could use this.
Absolutely. I agree with the concept with the opposing hands, opposing thumbs, whatever you want to call it. It makes sense where they're...
Not for everybody, but for some people, it's exactly what they need.
Correct. I agree.
And now, Kevin, you're a great putter. You don't. You're not looking to change anything, probably.
No, I've been going with the counterbalance, and it makes a big difference. I don't know why, but I've switched to that fatter grip. It's almost the same size as yours, but I don't know if I could go back to
it. More is the one Bobby had or the one that I have on my putter now?
More like the one you have on your putter now.
Yeah, this is just a little bigger than standard.
Yeah.
And,
but the counterbalance makes a huge difference for me for some reason.
Yeah, well, that's, again, with putting, there's so many different styles. And
it's all about, I get what that is, though. I mean, it puts you in that pendulum position where if you, you know, if you struggle with breaking your wrists and shoulders, you're gonna get that good form.
Absolutely. So thanks again. GarsonGolf.com is the website. That's Bobby's pick of the week this week. Subscribe and like the Finger Lakes Golfer podcast on YouTube if you're watching us online. We're also on iTunes, Stitcher.com, the FingerLakes1.com app at the Android or Apple store. That app's free. All these links, our latest episodes and complete archives are online at FingerLakes1.tv/golfpod. So, moving ahead here, we got about 10 minutes left in the show. Local golf news, a source close to negotiations, says that the PGA Championship set to return to Oak Hill Country Club in 2023, but officials are working on a deal where the tournament would return every decade, and the official announcement will happen September 1st, supposedly. So this is pretty good news, I suppose, for us, and it's a pretty reliable source, so that's awesome. I wish it was a little sooner.
Yeah, because we have nothing now that the LPGA left.
Yeah, apparently they're also working to get something back in from the LPGA, too, before 2023. But,
I think Oak Hill's such a great track. It should be every 5 years.
Whistling Straits is going to be. How about Oak Hill?
Yeah, right.
But does the membership want that?
That's true, too. It's something people don't consider. Yeah.
Tough call.
Maybe, yeah. I guess I didn't think about that either.
Yeah, I mean, the trend is towards public courses. That's why I think a lot of that goes along with that.
Yeah, you know, Seneca Falls will take it every 2 years.
You know what, though? Most Oak Hill members, I think, are proud of the fact that their course, and if you want to maintain that standing in the golf world, you got to keep hosting these majors. And U.S. Open hasn't come knocking in a long time, so it's like PGA or bust, which it's unfortunate. Right. I'd like to see the USGA come back there.
Right. But how much do you give up your golf course? Like 2-3 weeks, right?
At least.
Of course, the PGA comes in, takes over for a little while.
And I've heard stories where members have had to take, like, mats. Wasn't it that this year they'd have to take mats out? Every shot they'd hit, they'd have to take off a mat? Wasn't it this year at the U.S. Open they had to do that?
It could have been. I don't know why Chambers Bay wasn't really...
There was somewhere where the members had to go, they had to take a mat out.
That makes sense.
And set their ball on the mat and then hit off the mat.
Oak Hill does have 36 holes.
Yeah.
But they lose that for the golf tournament as well because the parking and...
For the tournament, but yeah, they can probably play that leading up to it. And honestly, if a major championship came to Seneca Falls Country Club, I wouldn't be looking to play those days. I'd be out there every day watching.
Right.
And it's for some of the people that live course side, you know, they make a fortune in parking or house rentals. Yeah. So
hot dogs.
So it's great to see them coming back in 2023. I'm going to get my tickets as soon as they come on sale. Central New York PGA update. Last week, Jay Terzic won the Emmett Kelly Masters at Cavalry Club at 4-under. Alex Smith was 2nd at 2. That's a major. And then a big-time tournament going on right now at Turning Stone is the Central New York PGA Championship. First round at Shenandoah, which took place earlier today. And the final round tomorrow at Dunio. And there you'll see you got Kevin Savage and Dennis Colligan leading at 4-under. Rick Bronson and Mark Tucker not too far behind at 2-under along with Dan Wood. So they'll head to Dunio tomorrow to see who wins the biggest tournament on the Central New York PGA Tour this year.
Is this their last tournament of the year or no?
No. There's, as a matter of fact, next week they go down for a pro-am at Binghamton Country Club in Endwell. Big weekend coming up if you like two-man scrambles, and I'd advise anybody to play in both of these and make a weekend out of it and maybe even get some side bets out with some other teams that are going dual tournaments. Make it a dual two-man scramble weekend. I'm talking about September 26th at Seneca Falls Country Club. It's the Scratch Series two-man fall scramble, And then coming up the next day on the 27th at Geneva Country Club, it's their fall invitational two-man scramble. So a couple of two-man scrambles, cash, skins game, great time, guaranteed. And I'm advocating playing both. I'm currently working on convincing my boss at home that I should play in both these events in September. And I'm getting way out ahead of it. You know, I'm not going to drop it on her the week of. I'm saying, hey, I didn't even tell her they were the same weekend. Tonight, before I came to the podcast, I said, I got to sit down with you and just go over some of the dates for some of these tournaments I want to play in coming up the next couple months. And she goes, it's going to be September. So anyways, I'm working on it. I'd advise you to, too. And there's more information on both these tournaments at SenecaFallsCountryClub.com and GCCGenevaNY.com. All right, holes in one for the week. Not very many this week. Tony Greco aced the 173-yard fifth at Beaver Meadows Golf Club using a 23-degree hybrid. Darwin Woods used a 6-iron to ace the 170-yard 12th hole at Winged Pheasant Golf Links. And Brendan Chambo used a 9-iron to score a hole-in-one in the 140-yard 6th at Sodus Bay. Also, Dana Allen at the Seneca Falls Country Club drops in a deuce on 16, the hardest hole in Central New York. Yep. Congratulations, Dana Allen. Send us your hole-in-ones to contact at fingerlakes1.com and make the subject line FLX Golfer. We'll read them on the air. And that brings us to my Zen Tip of the Week.
Zen Tip of the Week.
Okay, Zen Tip of the Week this week is it's a simple one. And that's... And we face pressure situations this week in our matches out there at Silver Creek. And, you know, club championships around the corner, there'll be some more pressure situations. And the tip of the week is don't forget to breathe when you're under pressure. It'll help you remove the anxiety. And it's a simple tip this week. Basically, take a couple of deep breaths. And the way that Dr. Joseph Parent says to do it is, you know, before you step into your pre-shot routine or as part of your pre-shot routine, take one or two deep breaths to the point where you are aware of the air going deep into your lungs and exhaling out. And no matter what, when the next thing you do after doing that, you're going to feel a little more comfortable. And part of it's biology, you know. Stressful situations, when someone's in danger, an animal's in danger, they're instinct is to freeze and be silent and to not breathe. And you can find that when you're really in a stressful, facing a stressful shot or a putt, a short putt to win the club championship or whatever it is, when you find yourself in this situation, you may not realize it, but your breathing may just shut right down. Mm-hmm. So take a couple deep breaths, get back into it. That's my Zen tip of the week. Not a very extensive tip.
You know what I like to think of, and I never thought about the breathing part of it, but when I want to think relaxed, I'm a big Mets fan, so I used to think about if I wanted to be relaxed when I got over the ball, I used to think of
Hernandez?
No.
Mookie Wilson?
No.
Dwight Gooden?
No.
Daryl Strawberry.
Wally Backman.
Keep going. Little later.
Lenny Dykstra.
Came for the Dodgers.
Piazza.
Piazza. Mike Piazza, when he was at the plate, the guy looked like he was going to fall asleep. He was the most relaxed batter you ever saw at the plate. So I would think, you know, I'd think of that through my head. So with what you're saying, which I've never thought about it before, is imagine, you know, if to take those breaths, think about Michael Phelps, you know, when he, right before he went into the water to do that 100-meter, or, you know, I don't know, I'm not a big swim guy, but I'm figuring they do 50-meter, 100-meter. You know, you see him in the Olympics, he's sitting there, he's taking those deep breaths, getting ready to get going. You know, I always think having that visual of another athlete that, you know, does what you want to do well, helps.
Yeah, and I don't know how Piazza got himself into that catatonic type of state at the plate, but
I have no idea. If any of you guys go on YouTube, if you've never seen it before, watch him. Just YouTube Mike Piazza at the plate, and think about that. When you want to be relaxed, it's such a... Just watch him when he was at the plate, and he was. You're right, catatonic. It was amazing.
That's what they say. You should try to lose all conscious thought over the golf swing. And let your... Although, Doug, you might disagree.
No, I don't disagree. I've told some of my friends they should play stupid. Okay. Basically, what I'm saying is forget everything,
right,
mechanically or whatever else is going on. So, no, I totally agree with that. I might not say it quite so eloquently sometimes, but...
Well, I've been, you know, I'm telling you guys, all the Zen stuff is paying off for me. Like, Tiger Woods is close? I'm close. I'm closer as I've ever been to playing the best golf of my life consistently. The way I'm doing it now is I'm having mid-70s to upper 70s for three or four rounds in a row, and then I'm throwing in like an 85 or 86 in there. And looking back at that 85, 86, I might be getting off to a bad start, and I start to... leave the Zen behind for a while until, and so, yeah, I'm working on it. I'm close, just like Tiger, except I'm not taking any time off. I got a full tournament slate coming up, including Club Championship coming off the Canal Cup this weekend. So,
nice.
Well, guys, hey, congratulations again on our victory. Captain Doug Brown, thanks again for doing a great job.
Doug,
Kevin,
great
like
job.
I said, I think that you, that putt on 13 may have been the one that kept the cup at Seneca Falls.
I hope so.
I really do. Or maybe, Bob, it was the putt that you made on one to start our day. Maybe you missed that putt. We go one down.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Who knows?
So,
can't get any closer. I know that.
Yeah, no, you can't get any closer than a tie.
No.
It's physically impossible. So, all right, guys. Thanks to everybody for tuning in, hanging out. We had a few live viewers with us tonight. Don't forget to join us next Monday night. We're coming down to the end of the season, Bob. We got maybe four shows left, maybe five, depending on how deep into October we go.
Yep.
But certainly fall golf, great time of year to play golf, so we'll have plenty to talk about over the remainder of this season. Remember to subscribe to the podcast. Email us at contact@fingerlakes1.com, subject line FLX Golfer, with your holes in ones, photos, videos, or events that you want us to promote. We're online at fingerlakes1.com/golfpod. And so for episode 37 of the Finger Lakes Golfer Podcast, I'm Jim Sinacropi. See you next Monday at 9. Until then, hit them long, not often.
Local content like this by becoming a patron of FingerLakes1.com. Visit patreon.com/FL1. FingerLakes1.com.